living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
And me too.
You too. Hey, Todd, do you know what the ceiling fan said to the ceiling?
I do not.
You go, ceiling. I love you. Number one, ceiling. Let's go. Go, ceiling.
Is that the end of the joke? I'm sorry. I've been practicing. Hold on. Oh no. Okay, I need to workshop that a little bit more. I tried to teach a couple of people how to play the jaw harp this past week, and it ended up with kids almost in tears because they kept whacking
hitting
their teeth with a sharp piece of metal. Hello. I'm here to take care of you.
Awesome.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven. With me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really good.
Good. I think we're both a little tired. You took a little epic adventure around the Pacific Northwest this past weekend.
Yeah, I've got a coworker who just moved here from Eastern Europe, and he and his wife and his 3-year-old, we took on a tour of Portland. It was supposed to be like the Multnomah Falls and then sites around Portland, but they really, really, really love the outdoors.
Oh, nice.
So we shifted the tour to be just an outdoors tour. So we started at Crown Point up at Vista House. Did the Multnomah Falls, Horsetail Falls, Hood River. We did a snow park up on Mount Hood, and then we did Timberline Lodge. And by then, they were falling asleep exhaustedly.
Yeah.
And so we came home after that, and it was a really fantastic day. But that was yesterday. That was like all day yesterday.
All day yesterday. Yeah. I've had to wake up early for the last 4 days. It was spring break, so I had to start early with some of the kids from work. So one of the days I had to be there at 9 a.m. And then Saturday I had to be somewhere at 9 a.m. And then this morning I had to wait. 6:30 my alarm went off this morning. I don't know how you people live like this. Let's dig into some news here. And we may or may not try something with some sound underneath the news. So I don't know if that's going to end up in the editing or not. So that's why you're hearing that sound. Okay. We just wanted to try to differentiate the news section a little bit from our main topic section. So we'll see how that works out. But the news, and I do have an official sounder for this, because we're getting into some Elon Musk news.
Time to Musk.
Wow.
Never ceases to amaze me.
So there was a long story that I'm going to try to look up later and kind of condense, because it went on and on and on, and it was about some sort of neuro pathwork network that Elon Musk has announced and is working on, which I'm assuming has to do with prosthetic limbs and all of the interfaces between how your brain works and communicates and how to integrate that with technology.
I almost added a Elon Musk story about him building Tesla cities. Did you?
Oh, really?
See
I haven't
that?
Seen that.
There was this article that he's got an outline for basically taking a small town and making it power walls, and you can only drive electric cars in the boundaries and all this stuff. And it was April Fool's joke, but it was very plausible.
I'll do my tried and true on that one.
So I
am getting better at that.
So we almost got that news article, and it would have been embarrassing.
That's funny. Fake news on this
welcome,
on this podcast.
Welcome to the we're shameless. We don't care.
You are fake news.
But in this story, SpaceX for the first time flew a segment of its Falcon 9 that was used in another launch this year. So they successfully launched What was the first stage that had been previously flown before? As an added bonus, SpaceX returned it to Earth, landing it upright on a drone ship in the Atlantic Ocean, a maneuver that the company has completed several times now. The rocket carried a commercial communications satellite and blasted off from Cape Canaveral's 39A launch pad, the historic site of the Apollo and Space Shuttle launches. SpaceX leases that from NASA. So that was their fourth successful launch of this year, and it's the latest of a bunch of firsts that they've had. They were the first to put a liquid fuel rocket built by a privately held company. That was 2008, the first to launch into orbit and return to Earth. In 2010, the first private company to send a spacecraft to the International Space Station, and the first to land a rocket's first stage on land in 2015. Things haven't always gone according to plan, though, because one of the Falcon 9 rockets exploded minutes after launch in 2015, and another blew up on the launch pad days before its scheduled flight in 2016. But still pretty amazing. And I watched the video they have of that, of the rocket landing upright on a drone ship in like a postage stamp size floating slab of concrete in the middle of the ocean. And it's just...
The Falcon 9 first stage, I believe it's about a 12-story building size. Like, I believe that that's, it's really, really, really tall.
It's large.
It's very large. And you think about the ridiculous amount of logistics, you know, and computer algorithms and AI that are going into making that happen. Maybe not AI, but it is an incredible math and and materials feat. And the concern that so many people have is, all right, you've taken this rocket full of blasting material and you've shot it into space and it has returned, and the stresses on that material are unfathomable. They're massive. And to then turn that around and do that again is incomprehensible, and that's what they've done.
That's so crazy.
So it's wild. It's awesome.
Wild stuff. Are you next? Are you going to do your Apollo Apollo story?
Yeah. So one of the former Google vice presidents, he is starting a nuclear hybrid reactor program where you have fusion, which is taking immense amount of energy and combining usually deuterium and some other elements.
There's one called deuterium.
Deuterium. It's not an element. It's a heavy water. It's a molecule.
Okay.
And it creates fusion energy and when fusion energy is created in that environment, it outputs some neutrons, and you can use those neutrons to instigate fission energy. And so you can have fusion and fission all in kind of one reactor called a hybrid reactor. And he claims, so his company is called Apollo Fusion, and they are in works right now out at the Idaho National Engineering Laboratory, where I used to work when I was in the Navy, doing tests on their hybrid reactor, which is this small modular, incredibly safe device, is what the promise is. And so it's got inherently safe. The Apollo Fusion hybrid reactor plants are designed for zero consequence outcomes to loss of cooling or
they will
loss
run
of
on rainbows and unicorns.
Pretty much.
It will.
They're inexpensive, relatively. Apollo Fusion power plants cost less per megawatt of output and are available in configurations which are affordable for even the smallest of communities. From 5 megawatts to 1,000 megawatts, or 1 gigawatt, and they are emission-free and all these. So he's highly trained. He was a VP at Google for 4 years. He was in charge of the project that they are working on to put blimps into
in 1935 where they belong.
Right. Blimps of Wi-Fi blimps, basically, to cover Africa and other places that wouldn't have easy infrastructure for putting Wi-Fi out into the bush. Apparently, that's really important. And
sounds like a big money maker.
And so he was in charge of it. So he's valid. He's credible. He's got an incredible amount of training, degree from MIT and another one from Harvard.
So what makes this different than how nuclear reactors do now? It's just a smaller version,
It sounds like a smaller version with some. We don't have any details, and so he's just launched the website with all of these claims.
I'm looking at it's that first very, one. The Apollo Fusion hybrid power plants are designed for zero consequence outcomes to the loss of cooling or loss of control scenarios, and they cannot melt down. We say, laughing in the face of God, why this ship can't sink.
Right.
I assure you, it can, Captain. It is made of metal.
So.
That's my Titanic.
Yeah, this is good.
My Titanic impression. I'm sure you can.
Yeah. So Apollo Fusion, it's the...
Oh, and emission free. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, go that project.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. The Slowpoke Bill gets the Senate's... Oh, good grief. This is the headline from the, I don't know what newspaper I got this from, probably from Oregon Live. Slowpoke bill gets in the Senate's passing lane.
Oh.
This is from Salem, Oregon. A bill targeting drivers known as left lane squatters or left lane campers. You ever heard those terms?
I have never heard those terms, but I know what
I know
they
what
mean
they mean
immediately.
A bill targeting drivers known as, and they didn't even put it in quotes. So that it just passed the Oregon Senate on Tuesday. If the bill passes the House and the governor signs it, left lane squatters could get a $250 ticket. Right now, one of the sponsors of the bill was up in 2013, but never made it out of committee. It's not about the speed; it's about the flow of traffic. So I had some traffic related questions that I had written down. First, I wanted to officially complain on the air about the city of Milwaukee. I already did a Facebook tirade about them. So
I did
you see that?
I saw your tirade.
So long tirade short, I went to spend my hard-earned dollars in downtown, old downtown Milwaukee.
I've been to downtown Oregon City.
Yeah, different place.
Okay, so
downtown, Milwaukee is if you're taking the 99 down.
Bob's Red Mill. I know Bob's Red Mill.
It's not off of that chute. It goes down and you end up on McLaughlin.
Okay.
Like basically if you, it turns into McLaughlin that goes through Milwaukee and all of that. But it's kind of a small turn off of the town, and it's, you know, this nice little small town thing. They've got a great antique store that's got tons of cool books and records and VHS. And then they've got Things from Another World, which is a fantastic comic book store. And that's where Dark Horse Comics is, their headquarters is. So I went there, and there's no parking. It's always a pain to park because it's kind of a small, little area. So that's always a pain, but there's no parking meters. And so everything's free to park. And so I parked and went in and bought some VHS tapes at the antique store and came back to my car, and there was a ticket on my car. And I was like, there's no parking meters. How did I disobey, whatever? And I looked at it, and my tabs are expired. And so They had a meter made for a town that has no parking meters, just going from car to car, taking a picture of their license plates and then just running it through her little handheld Star Trek machine to see if anything came up. And so I got dinged. I mean, I haven't gotten my tabs because I lost all of that work and I've been, crawling out from under that. And so that's been the last thing on the burner because who cares? Apparently I should have. But I mean, that's $125 that I needed to use for electricity or whatever.
Right.
And so on top of that, I have to pay $80 to the city of Milwaukee, who has nothing to do. Like, I wasn't violating one of their specific laws. It's like an Oregon law. Why am I giving this money to the city of Milwaukee?
Well, we're driving on their streets.
So, yeah, like I said, my Facebook quote, eat me, Milwaukee. So now that that's out of my system. But so I was driving downtown, when was it? I think last Monday, I went on a whim. No, wait, it was last Friday.
Okay.
When did you see the Unipiper?
On Friday.
On Friday, okay.
Yep.
So I was riding, I was driving downtown because somebody requested a notebook that I didn't have, and I had a couple extra hours. And so I went to the downtown Goodwill to look through the VHS. And so I'm getting through the Terwilliger curves and right kind of to where the tram goes over I-5 by OHSU. And I look in front of me and I see this, you know, old green Ford Ranger, and there's two people in it. And I kind of look at it, and all of a sudden I realize, and it's a bumper to kind of bumper to bumper traffic,
right,
too.
It's thick traffic.
Like at one, it was like two in the afternoon, maybe. Right. And there's Mark and Nick in the car in front of me on I-5 in the middle of the day in an area that you don't ever go drive on or live near.
I literally haven't been on that highway during a commuting hour in a year, at least. I mean, we travel down there when we go to Southern Oregon.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So we're either coming in or out of town.
And so I wasn't sure, because it's happened once before where I thought I was behind you when you were in your truck and it wasn't you. And so I texted you and said, "Are you in front of me?" And then we saw, and we like both took pictures from our cars, right, or whatever. But the rest of the day, it was making me, it was like one of those stoner thoughts of like, if I would have stopped to tie my shoe,
right,
like that would, like all of the things in the world that had to happen for us to both end up on I-5 at that time of day, and like everything in everyone else's, right, lives and all of that.
It's not like you saw me off in the distance and, you know, it was, were directly behind
you. Yeah. So that was just,
and so we went down, Nick and I went down to the, Lake Oswego, high school. They were having a robotics competition. And so the junior high and high school of the areas, they have a program called FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, which has...
Thank you for spelling that.
Like,
it's not even an acronym. <It's>, you're just making sure we're all keeping up to speed. Got a classroom that's C-L-A-S-S-R-O-M, one word.
Yes. The FIRST robotics championship. And so this was the district level championships. And so
FIRST International Robotic something.
Okay, hold on. FIRST robotics.
To put the show on hold.
For inspiration and recognition of science and technology. And so they've got a robotics competition.
That's ham-fisted.
It is really. It's,
they work backwards
a
from
acronym.
That.
Acronym.
Acronym. Oh, I just hit my face in the mic.
speaking of some of my favorite acronyms and backronyms, so PHP is a language that I write in at work. It was originally made. PHP stood for personal homepage, because this Russian guy named Rasmus Lyrdorf, he just made his personal homepage with it. And so then it started becoming a real language, and they had to make up a name that sounded more scholarly official, and more officially. So it's pre-processed hypertext. And
at the end,
hypertext. It's just so stupid. Twain drivers. Remember when you bought a scanner, you used to have to get Twain drivers.
Yeah,
those
are
tools without an interesting name.
Oh, gosh. Yep.
Okay, so.
Be faster. I need like a quick draw thing, or the Bob Dylan thing where I have a special holder for the slide whistle that always holds it up to my mouth like he does with his harmonica.
there was an email program when in the 90s called ELM, for Electronic Letter Manager, and there was an updated version that somebody else made that was better than ELM, and they called it Pine, which just literally they said Pine is not ELM as the acronym.
Which, that's pretty good.
It's pretty fantastic. Okay, so what were we
you're
talking
driving
about?
Up from the
FIRST
robotics.
Yeah, so they have kids that they have a team of kids they meet at a high school, but it's junior high and high school, and they are given a goal, an accomplishable task, mm-hmm, that the robot can do, and it engages artificial intelligence and tries to accomplish these things. And so they're put into an arena with several different goals that are available to them. So either collect the balls, and if you collect 9 balls, that's 1 point. If you do it under AI, then it's more points. If you have to engage manual control with the joysticks, then it's fewer points.
Interesting.
If you take this gear and put it on the cog, then you get 40 points because it's a more complex task. And so you could like take all of your energy and focus at just doing the gear and trying to get a couple of those. You're going to get a lot more points than the balls.
Yeah.
And then so it's got all these tests. So we went there and it was like the junior nerd Olympics. Oh my gosh. These guys dressed up, and there's one room that is the robot pits and the other room that is the competition area. And so you go into the pits, it's like
team 1722 is looking for a 5366 controller. If anybody's got a 5366 controller,
and it's, that is just going on, and you have to wear safety glasses to go into the gym, and everybody's just nerding out everywhere. And I was inspired. These kids were great. They were super talkative about like what they were accomplishing,
cool.
And the types, and they definitely didn't know how to contextualize things for somebody who like, okay, so I'm just arriving. Like, what's the goal of your, you know, what are the kind of things that your robot's about to accomplish?
They couldn't high level it.
There was no high level. It went straight into the weeds of like, well, the 5366 controller engages with the stepper motors to articulate the, you know, like, so it grabs balls and puts them into a basket, or no, there was none of that.
That's so cool.
It was great. And so we were coming back because that was happening in the middle of the day. So yeah. I was coming back to work after that. And
I had gotten off work a little early, and I'll head uptown to Goodwill real quick.
And right behind me.
And then it was like that. And then it was that thing because we kind of texted back and forth and ha 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 and took a picture or whatever. And it was that thing like, that awkward thing where you're walking with someone and you're like, you're going to your cars and you're like, okay, bye. And then you realize you have like 100 more feet to walk with that same person. Cause then we're like, do I still say something? I guess we're kind of done. We don't really.
What else is there to say? I don't know. Waved like, hi.
Beep, beep. So yeah, that was, it was tripping me out all day. But anyway, well, moving on to a couple more news stories. Got a sweet tooth. Why waiting 25 seconds removes a craving for chocolate. A trial using vending machines found that having to wait for sugary treats made them less desirable. Scientists installed countdown timers on the machines, forcing customers who had ordered chocolate or other unhealthy products to wait 25 seconds before the item became available. They were able to change their mind and select a healthy snack at any point during the countdown, which would then become instantly available. Meanwhile, those who selected something healthy in the first place were not forced to wait at all. Over 14 months, the team found the delay prompted up to a 5% increase in the purchase of healthy snacks, but the new software did nothing to harm the revenues brought in by the machine. So, people want stuff now. Americans, I don't have anything in my mouth right now. I need to eat. Can't you see? I'm not chewing. Now, find that apple. And then you'd have to do it twice so the apple comes. And while you're eating the apple, the 25 seconds elapses. And now you can have your candy at the end. Ha. All right. Well, we have a real-life Sharknado story.
Yes.
A huge man-eating shark was found on the road in Australia as it was battered by Cyclone Debbie. Emergency workers were left stunned when they found the dead bull shark in a puddle as they carried out inspections following Cyclone Debbie. I have a picture we can put up on our screen here while I read that. Photos of the shark went viral as Queensland Fire and Emergency Services warned people to stay out of murky floodwaters because sharks and other dangerous creatures could be lurking underneath. The huge predator was found on a road after torrential rains and fierce winds. So,
I'm looking at the feed online. It anytime things get bright on there, it just gets washed out.
Oh, well,
you can kind of see it.
I wanted to see the shark again.
Yeah.
Anyway, chances are you've already seen it show up in your one of your feeds somewhere. So, anyway, I think that's all I had.
And me.
Oh no, I had one. I'm looking back at my notes on traffic. I had one other question, just to see if you had the same answer that I have and that everybody else has. So, if you, let's say, like when I was driving up here, I want to get here as fast as I can, but I don't want to, you know, get a speeding ticket. Mm. What speed do you go over to get there faster, but know that, oh, they're not going to pull me over?
Just more than 5. It's between 5 and 10, but I go like, and if I know that I'm going 10 miles over the speed limit, I know that that's, I feel that that's a infraction that they would pull me over for.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 isn't. And so I ride between that 6 and 8.
Okay. Yeah. And I always do 9. And I always set my cruise control to 9. So I'm like, well, it's not enough to pull you. And I think over 15 that's when it's reckless driving, I think. If probably. You're 15 or more miles per hour over the speed limit, but I always, and it's funny because every time I feel like everybody has that number as if, and they'll talk about it like as if the police have said, yeah, we're not going to pull you over if you're only doing 9 over. But anyway, it's funny how people have that same answer.
I'm wondering why nobody's watching us on Facebook. Right. The Final Four, like the March Madness final game is going on right now. And so John Azell is like, why don't you have the game on the TV so that people can watch the game and enjoy it? Like, it's not a bad idea, John.
There's a football game on tonight?
Basketball.
No, I know.
Right. Hockey.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. So.
Chelsea. I think Chelsea is watching us. Chelsea Heath is Nate Heath's wife. Nate Heath is of the Not Nerd podcast.
Oh yeah.
And we posted it and talked about it a while ago. He has that that mustache that's really long, and we were trying to figure out the name. He was in the Oregon Beard Association or something like that, like right. Online beard off in this last weekend.
I saw the picture that he had on his feed with the. Did he come in second?
He came in second, yeah. But I think there was 3 or 4 rounds maybe, and so you would go in, you know, and vote. It was a Facebook voting thing, and there was always all this controversy as to whether, because it would be like Nate's picture with his facial hair, and then like some guy with like big beard. And like everyone was getting mad. They're like, is that even a beard? And like, what's going on? And like the Oregon beard site had to like step in and be like, it's considered a beard because it goes past the mouth and all that. And it was like all this.
So Nate just joined us. He was robbed. So, yes, he was.
Well, and there was even more excitement because in the second to last round, it was Nate versus some dude with big black beard. I do think he was a guy with a red beard one, and it wasn't that great of a beard. I think it was just because it was red, but whatever. But the results came back, and Nate had won that second to last round by 1 point. And they were like, congratulations! And then some Facebook commenter came on and was like, well, I tallied up the votes myself, and it turns out that if you use the Instagram thing, then they're tied. And so they had to like both go into the final. So there was 3 in the final round. Instead of 2 in the final round. So, yeah. Partial Buick. Yeah, so they call it a partial Buick. I think it does need to have its own name.
Yeah.
I want it to be the Fascinator. The Fascinator beard. Because it's kind of a tiny, quirky beard, just like right. It's a tiny, quirky hat. So, anyway.
Have you seen any of the international competition winners? Like, the winner last year, year before, was the Birdcage, had an operating door on it. And, I mean, it's phenomenal.
I always see the guy, and he styles his beard, like, in big curls that kind of surround his whole face as if he was a flower, which is pretty great. Oh, and Nate did have a great video of how he waxes out his mustache, which is pretty big. He washes it every day, and it's like it's down like a normal human
like
hair.
A Fu Manchu
and then he he twirls us anyway. That, that was our week. Probably.
I don't know if I'm supposed to say that anymore. they're called foo people chew now. Otherwise, it's sexy.
Foo person chew, Mark. Per foo person chew. All right. Well, we're going to try this little experiment with the breaking up these segments. So we'll come back in a second, and we're going to talk about prosopagnosia.
Yes.
Better known as face blindness. So we will be right back. Well, hello. Hello, Brian the Unipiper. How are you? Hello.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, there you are.
Hi.
Yes, I'm here.
I literally spoke too soon. I always speak right away, and I always forget the Skype needs a little time to catch up and connect.
The Skype delay. Coming to you this week from the Unipiper's brand new Unipiper studio.
Ooh, where is that?
It's just upstairs in my... oh,
a secret lair.
It sounds windier up there.
It is more echoish.
Okay.
I have you guys recorded on video, so I'm going to try and post my Unipiper segment on my page from the video from the other end.
Ooh, oh, nice.
Very nice.
We'll see how the other half lives.
Yeah.
So what's going on around Portland these days? We missed you last week, so you're going to have to fill us in on all the happenings.
Yeah, it was a busy week for me last week. I had the release of my Unipiper beer with Rogue Ales. Mark and Nick came out, and Mark, you had some. Any thoughts on the Uniporter?
Uniporter is pretty fantastic. So it's got a really smoky taste to it, and it's a porter, so it's full flavored and full bodied, and I liked it a lot.
Cool. Yeah. The smoky part came from the peated malt that was put into it. So, you know, it could tie to whiskey in Scotland and bagpipes and give it kind of a Unipiper flair.
Nice.
Yeah. And then this weekend, I don't know if you saw what I was up to, but I risked life and limb for an epic photograph. I was riding my unicycle on a rope that they had installed between the twin spires of the Oregon Convention Center.
That's what I heard.
On Saturday you did that, right?
Yeah, Saturday, April 1st.
That was a pretty fantastic picture. I saw that go by in my feed. That and you. There's a new picture of you riding past all the cherry blossoms that are down on the riverfront, which is a great picture.
Yeah, that's going on. I feel like the cherry blossoms are a bigger deal than ever this year. Everyone is talking about them, and there were photo contests for the best cherry blossom photos, and they're still in full bloom. I feel like every year they don't last very long, like a week.
Right.
So if you haven't gotten around to going to see them, you probably should do that right now. They are definitely gorgeous this year.
And the very, very full Willamette River. When I drive downtown, I drive over the I-5 bridge, and it, last week I noticed it actually going, you see OMSI off to the right when you're going, north on I-5, and the Blueback, which is the submarine that's parked outside of OMSI, is almost level now with OMSI. Yeah. And so usually, you know, you walk down a plank quite a bit, quite a big grade to get down to the river, but the river is so high now, it's almost parallel to OMSI. It's so weird.
Oh my gosh. Well, we are preparing ourselves right now to go through the full range of emotions as a Portland citizen.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember a few years ago, I think it was in 2013. Do you remember when they were doing construction on the Morrison Bridge?
Yes, yes.
And it was an absolute headache for everyone involved.
Well, and before that, like right after in the early to mid 2000s, it was the Burnside Bridge that was never, ever, ever, ever open for like 5 years. Like I still to this day, I get surprised when I'm like, oh yeah, I can take the Burnside Bridge now because it was closed for so long. And then it transferred to the Morrison.
And when they were doing the MAX train across the Broadway Bridge, that was closed forever as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So now the Morrison Bridge is closed down to two lanes again and will remain so through October. And the frustrating part is that this is simply to fix the job that wasn't done right the first time back in 2013.
Man.
There is just a scathing, in-depth Portland Mercury article that explains the situation in excruciating detail, and how every little mistake that was made throughout this construction, they were just calling out, and they were like, we got problems coming, and this is it. And it goes deep. Like, the city is paying. The city had sued the company that messed it up the first time, and now they're hiring that same company, giving them more money to fix it this time.
That was the detail that stuck out of the article to me.
Yeah, it's frustrating. So, you know, you can go enjoy the cherry blossoms and be frustrated at the same time, like true Portlander should.
Can you watch the progress of the... of the bridge maintenance being done on maybe Cover Oregon, the website or something, like just terrible projects that suck down taxes.
They'll talk about the big tunnel in Seattle.
Exactly.
Yeah, I bet you could watch it from a webcam on tripcheck.com.
Or from Mark's office building.
Mark's office.
Exactly.
What else is going on? Oh, there are a number of really cool events coming up this week and this weekend. This weekend is the Cherry City Comic Con. For those of you that did not know, Cherry City is the nickname for our state capital, Salem. They've been doing their own little, I say little, but it's a sizable deal. I was actually there last year at the Cherry City Comic Con. I couldn't make it again this year for scheduling reasons, but it was a very fun little wholesome Comic-Con, and they've even got some talent and some actors and voice artists, the whole nine yards, lots of cosplay. But it's on more of a sort of a community level. Like, it doesn't feel as big and overwhelming as the ones that usually go on here in Portland.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's definitely worth checking out if that floats your boat. But the Unipiper on Saturday will be performing at the Northwest Vintage Radio Society.
What is that?
Annual radio and electronics sale, which is going on at the North Portland Eagles Lodge. This is an organization that I got involved with a couple of years ago. I got and still am really big into vintage radios and tube amps and things like that. And if you buy anything like that these days, you know, it's usually very expensive, especially if it's restored nicely. But we came across the Northwest Vintage Radio Society, and it's a group of mostly older gentlemen who, you know, take this hobby very seriously, and they fix up these radios and then sell them. And the equipment they have and the passion they put into their projects, and for the prices that they're asking, I guarantee you're not going to find a better deal for some really cool antiques.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and so they're going to have a big sale and then an auction at the end, and you can check out the flyer at their website at nwvrs.org for northwestvintageradiosociety.org. And they've got this flyer, and then in a tiny little sentence at the bottom, it says, "Nationally acclaimed Unipiper will offer entertainment."
Nice. Yes. Well done. That yeah. audience is going to be confused. They're going to be looking up from the big bin of vacuum tubes and lifting one eyebrow, one of their giant eyebrows.
They'll give me radio, so I'll stop playing.
No, they'll. I can imagine if there's a crowd that will love something like that. It's people that would be there. So that's awesome. That sounds fantastic.
But I tell you what, if I was not doing that this weekend, I would be in McMinnville, because holy crap, I just heard about the annual Farm Fest and plowing competition.
Oh,
what?
Largest plowing competition on the West Coast.
Hey now.
You can watch 20 teams of draft horses and mules in a plowing competition. They're going to be doing demos and sawmills and blacksmithing and
oh wow,
kids pioneer area, old time food and music. It sounds amazing, and that's going on at the Yamhill Valley Heritage Center in McMinnville.
That sounds amazing.
Farm Fest, yeah, totally.
Very cool.
So lastly, let me okay, so we've gone through the full range of emotions in Portland, but it can't be complete unless you have some good old self-deprecating PDX humor. So right now, go to Twitter and look up the Twitter handle, all one word, Wow So Portland.
Okay, right, I'm pulling it up.
I don't know how to use Twitter.
Just go to twitter.com/WowSoPortland.
Wow So Portland.
Yes.
All right, hold on. I clicked on Twitter.
Okay.
Oh, now I'm clicking on the thing.
This is the, my opinion, the least Portland related humor that I've seen in a while.
Should I spoil what it is, or should I just have to?
No, totally.
Okay.
Explain what you're seeing.
So it's just literally a bunch of random, nondescript Google Street View images of like an old industrial building. And it's like, it's usually gross industrial areas or parking lots and undeveloped area, and everything as bad as like Portland's so crazy, these quirky Portlanders, and it's just like a nondescript building that could be anywhere, or like a shipping lot.
Those adorable Portlanders are always up to something cute. It's a parking lot.
That's pretty funny. Wow, so Portland.
What struck me is like the dedication here. Do you see the number of tweets they have?
I've been scrolling down and down and down, and I was like, how long has this been going on? And like, I'm down, and it's only been a couple days.
There's 2,031 tweets,
and it looks like they've all been within the last couple of weeks or months. Oh wow, that is crazy. That is dedication. Because like the ones way down at the bottom, there's like, you know, two favorites and like one retweet or whatever. So it's not like it's been popular for a long time. Oh,
no.
Wow, that's funny.
It's been on the Mark and Toddcast now. Their moment is about to happen.
They're gonna get the Mark and Toddcast bump. We should monitor their Twitter feed for the next couple days.
It's measurable.
Usually for the negative, but you can measure it.
You can measure it.
Awesome. Well, if people want to find out more about you, actually, so when you're out and about in town, which you were this Saturday or something like that, Sunday,
and it
popped up. Oh, that's right. It was the same day that we'll talk about that later. The same day that I inexplicably followed Mark on the freeway. But you do have your Where's the Unipiper at? Or what is that site that people can go to?
Yeah, so you can either go directly to whereistheunipiper.com.
Okay.
Or you can link to it from my main page at unipiper.com if that was too much to remember. but just click on the Find the Unipiper link, and when I'm out, there will be a live GPS map showing my current location. And I know that you saw me on, I think, Friday, Mark. I'm just curious, were you using the app or did you just randomly see me?
No. So, Nick and I were driving from work, where we had just had a kind of a celebratory, meeting at work, and we were driving to ground control to play video games. And as we were going, down third or fourth ish area, whichever one goes north, we heard bagpipes. And we're like,
who could that be?
And we looked to our left, and coming down the sidewalk was you, up by Pioneer Courthouse Square area ish
yeah, I stick to the sidewalks. I don't risk my life on the streets.
Yeah. Amen.
Awesome. Yeah, so find out all about him at theunipiper.com. All right. Well, it was good talking to you again, Brian. We will talk to you later.
Okay. See you guys.
All right. So today I had originally wanted to talk about memory and how the brain works memory-wise, but I came across something, and I'm trying to remember where, and I can't remember because it was like the second mention of it that made me go, okay, let me look into this. And the first was on some podcast, and somebody had made a joke about, oh, that person must have face blindness, which is so silly sounding that I didn't think it could possibly be a real thing. And then what I think happened, I think I was reading some article that said Brad Pitt has face blindness or something like that. That was totally like this clickbait article. But I go to Wikipedia and I type in, you know, Brad Pitt face blindness or whatever. And he made some remark about it like years ago in an interview, but hasn't really talked about it. But it turns out that the actual condition of face blindness is like an actual real thing that that people had. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that and how that works and what's going on. So like I said, the official word for face blindness is prosopagnosia, which is a combination of Latin words, now that I forget what they are, but one of them is, it basically just means the inability to be familiar with or recognize. So it's the inability to recognize faces, which sometimes includes yourself, while all of your other visual processing is intact and normal. Like they're not confused by what things are. They just can't remember people's faces. And you can either be born with it, if there's a congenital component to it, or it can be acquired through some brain trauma. So there's an actual section of your brain that is more receptive to activity when someone is looking at someone's face. Like it's a very distinctive, okay, like if you look at a book, yep, like picture of the book and all that. And it's, if you kind of follow your jawline back behind your ears at the base of your skull, there's an area that's in the middle, kind of sandwiched in the middle section of your brain, kind of right around that area that kind of goes the length of the back of your head, that is called the fusiform gyrus, which is the area of the brain that that activates in specific to responses to faces. But it also it also will be more receptive like to even animals' faces and stuff like that, if you're in if those are like an important part of your daily thing or you're growing up. Especially when they started studying this, because for the long time it was kind of like color blindness, how a lot of people with this even today don't really know they have it. Right. Which I'm convinced that this thing exists. There's a name blindness, and that's what I have, and that's why I can't ever remember anyone's name. So I suffer from name blindness. But you would just think, you know, and often those people are shy and they don't want to interact because it's uncomfortable and they're not sure. And right, like even to the point, and it's not a thing like color blindness where like you have it or you don't. It can be a range of how bad you have it or how little you have it. But it basically comes down to your brain, like can see an object, like I'm looking at that bookshelf with all the different things on it, and I'm looking at Mark's face too. And our brains are wired to see more detail in each other's faces than, you know, other objects and mm-hmm, other things around us, because it's such an important thing for communication. I mean, that's the first thing babies do, is we'll mimic what your face is right, doing and all of that. So for the longest time, when they were looking at how brains work just over human history, at first, until I would say, you know, quite late in our education, I would guess about ourselves in the 1700s and stuff like that, up until then, they thought the brain was just like any other organ, like the spleen or the liver. It did one thing and it pumped out, you know, responses to different things. But they didn't really think it had any. They thought the mind was still a separate thing from the brain. They thought it, the mind resided somewhere else. The brain was just an organ like anything else. After a while, they began to notice, you know, after studying for a while, that different areas of the brains do different things. And not only that, but our brains are fairly elastic. So if we're exposed to things when we're younger, like language, we're able to take that in and retain it. And those parts are elastic. And so with places like that, the fusiform gyrus in your brain, if you're surrounded as a kid, and I found this kind of fascinating, if you're surrounded as a kid by lots of people from lots of different places, you will have less problem in distinguishing people from those races. In other words,
okay,
one of my favorite, and I don't say this very often, one of my favorite things I've ever written was an article about how everyone thought I looked like the guy from the Verizon ad, just right, because I had short black hair and black glasses. And I started off the little article I wrote by saying, here's why all Asian people look alike to me. And the whole point of the article is because, like, in America, we can rely on different skin color, hairstyle, all of that. But when you're talking about countries that have a very specific look and type, and everyone's more or less the same, it's harder for me as an American who I'm used to seeing right. people with all of those things yeah, to have to concentrate on the minute face right.
the
differences.
The cues that we use are different from the cues used in Asian countries.
Right, right, totally. Right. And the article I was reading was talking about a guy from India, I think, who has this, and he's like, it's impossible to tell Europeans apart. I don't know how you got, like, and he was just talking all of Europe, like, all you right. white people look exactly the same to me. I don't know right. what's going on. So there was a couple of people who started mentioning this thing, and the first major mention and the word prosopagnosia was came from 1947 was the first use of that, where people were really starting to explore the brain and really seeing the different areas that did different things. But it was still kind of not taken seriously as much as some of the other things, because it's such a hard thing to kind of tap down. And people, like, because like I said, like with color blindness, eventually you're going to notice everyone's talking about a color you can't see, as right. opposed to I just can't recognize people. But then there's a famous neuroscientist called Oliver Sacks, who had a big book in the 80s called what's it called? The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And it was a bunch of different, really interesting kind of case studies about different neurological disorders and stuff like that. And one of them was face blindness. And it turns out that Oliver Sacks himself has that. And he didn't really know that he had it, because it was kind of a mid to, you know, it wasn't a huge life crushing issue, but he came across, one of the case studies of a man who had it, like, extremely, like, he couldn't recognize his wife. He couldn't recognize him, like, any of this stuff. And so Oliver Sacks kind of realized that he had it too. And here's a little snippet of an interview that Oliver Sacks did with Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And so Sanjay just asked him, like, what are you seeing right now when you're looking at me? Like, how would you describe what you're seeing? So here's what he said.
So I would recognize you, especially by your teeth.
That's interesting. What about the rest of my face?
Well, the rest of your face is sort of, I can see your expressions and your attention and where your eyes look. But I see all the features, but it doesn't quite add up to a unique image for me.
So I didn't notice that when I watched it earlier, but so Dr. Sanjay Gupta and Oliver Sacks are sitting, like, in a library type room with books behind them. It sounds like it's recorded on downtown streets of Manhattan. I don't know what is going on there.
Seriously.
The horns and trucks. But a lot of what they say is that, or the people that have this say is, like, I can tell that you have these eyes and nose, like, those things right. don't confuse me. Objects don't confuse me, but they don't go together to form something unique to me.
Right.
Like
right.
where the rest of us see a face, in one of my favorite terms, in a gestalt way, which is things are bigger than the sum of its parts.
Right.
We see it that way. They just still see eyes and a nose, just like, and so they'll have to rely on most of them by voice. Like, one guy couldn't, he couldn't tell. I have two quotes here that I'll try to find real quick. So one guy, and he got it from a head injury. So he said the next day or after he recovered, he got out of my bed. My mind is clear, but I could not recognize the bedroom. I had difficulty in finding my way around. I couldn't recognize the room, which is seemed like a strange place. Then I found all faces were alike. I couldn't tell the difference between my wife and my daughters. Later, I had to wait for my wife or mother to speak before recognizing them. My mother is 80 years old. I can see the eyes, nose, and mouth quite clearly, but they don't add up. They just seem chalked in, like on a chalkboard. So, yeah, it's this really, and there's kind of tangentially an opposite of this problem. And it's kind of like people with photographic memory, where this guy was talking about, he's like, I'll be walking down the street and I'll be like, oh my gosh, how have you been doing, to like some guy that's walking by. And it turns out like that guy was a cater waiter 3 years ago at this thing he went to and served him this. And like the guy just has instant, like unstoppable recognition for like everyone he walks by. Which would be, that would be pretty terrible. But they said this same area of the brain is also the things like, if you're really into something like bird watching or something that has, you're able to recognize these things from a distance without, you know, consulting. It's right. That same area of the brain that gets stimulated to recognize those organic things.
As a child, I used to have a little bit of an existential question of myself of, what is it that when I see this man's face versus this man's face, what is it that I am seeing the difference of?
Yes.
In order to figure, because I knew that to me, they looked radically different.
Yep.
But I couldn't figure out what the differences were on the,
yeah,
the, you know, what the math was that was adding up to a different, yeah, equation in this one, because they both had the two eyes and they both,
yeah,
had, yeah, but the subtle little nuances between the two are what that brain center focuses on and says, ah,
that
you are now seeing this face.
Yeah. I do. And I like how you said, yeah, when you were a kid, you thought about that, because I still think about that all the time. Like, what is the difference? And another thing that I always obsess about is what makes us look old, like with the absence of like gray hair or like actual wrinkles.
Right.
What is it? And like you can see, because with celebrity pictures, they airbrush all the wrinkles out, all their hair looks young, but they still look old. And I'm always obsessed with like, I can tell that this is a picture of, speaking of plastic surgery and stuff like that, of Madonna from 1987 and, you know, 2007, even if you took all the wrinkles away. Mm-hmm. And like, so our faces still do change and grow, I think, throughout life. And that's, I think it's just a component of that. But Oliver Sacks, again, to go back, he said you learn all these life hacks, or whatever they would call them on the internet, where you rewire your brain around the problem. So he would be able to recognize people like by the way they walk, or he said he would recognize his neighbors because of the dogs they have, because a big brown dog with someone was a lot easier for him to distinguish because of the dog than the people's faces. So he'd be like, oh, that brown dog is with Molly. That must be Molly. And so he would recognize people that way. It's not easy to diagnose. They do have a couple standard tests that they do that can be administered, but a couple of them are oddly problematic. You wouldn't think like this would be all that hard to test for.
Right.
Like, and Oliver Sacks thing, they showed him a picture of Elvis and Marilyn Monroe. And he's like, he couldn't figure out who Elvis was. He figured out who Marilyn Monroe was only because he said it was like a kind of a glamour shot of, I don't know why I did that. I was doing the hand, I was waving around my hand, you know, glamorously. And he deduced that only a model or an actress would pose like that. And because it was black and white, he'd guess Marilyn Monroe. But there is a website called troublewithfaces.org.
I'm going there now.
So everybody go to troublewithfaces.org. And this is a whole site. So yeah, around 2.5% of the general population are born with face blindness.
What? 2.5%?
2.5%. It looks like there's a couple other things. Alexithymia, which is a condition characterized by difficulties recognizing, distinguishing, and describing feelings from the bodily sensation. Oh.
2.5% is a staggering number. I mean,
I read that in four different places today.
We know people with this.
We know people with face blindness. Do you have face blindness?
I don't think so.
How do you recognize me?
Right. Your voice.
My voice. How I, my mannerisms, like how I do glamorous.
I look for a big body with a little tiny circle on top.
I figured that grown adult with a child-sized head that couldn't possibly be correct proportions, and I call that Todd. Anyway, yeah, troublewithfaces.org, and there's a, I don't see the link here on their main page now, but troublewithfaces.org/test-yourself-1, you can take a fairly lengthy test, and it's considered a pretty good one.
It's the P120 questionnaire. It's in the right column. There's a link there.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, if you want to diagnose yourself with face blindness. But there are a couple, famous people that have it, including, like I said, Oliver Sacks. But Jane Goodall also has face blindness. And she said it was always hard to figure out which chimps were the different chimps because she couldn't put it together in her head anyway. And they're chimps and probably look really similar in the best of circumstances. So she must have marked them somehow, like colored one.
Nick has a signed photo from Jane
from
Goodall,
Jane Goodall.
And met her at a book show one year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's pretty great.
Yeah.
And there's another syndrome that I wanted to get. It was a little too tangential, but it's called the Capgras delusion. And that is a delusion that people aren't forgetting faces of people, but they are convinced that those people are imposters.
Oh, so I've heard of that.
I know that you are Mark. You look exactly like Mark, but there's something wrong and you're not Mark. Right. And I'm surrounded by people that are not who they say they are. And it's not specifically a schizophrenic thing, even though it's related. But I had mentioned earlier this week to listener Andre that I was going to do face blindness. And he said, oh, isn't that a big thing in people with autism? And I was like, oh, I didn't think so, because Colin doesn't have it. So that's the only autistic kid I knew for a long time. And so it did say there were some associations with it, but it wasn't. There wasn't a huge correlation with it. And in other words, it's not like all autistic kids have trouble with.
Right.
It did show up in some way. But I thought I had one more thing, but that's kind of the basic of that. And like I said, I didn't think this was a real thing until it came up more than once, and the second time not in a comedic context. So I was really surprised to learn that it's indeed a real condition,
a real thing,
just called face blindness, which is just is funny. But like I said, there's a great New Yorker article about it. Oliver Sacks. Oh, and it's by Oliver Sacks, the New Yorker article, and a book and a bunch of interesting stuff about it, including some live interviews with Oliver Sacks talking about it. So it's just, our brains are so weird and so complicated and so just fascinating that we take a lot of it for granted. So be happy that you can recognize the face of those around you these days. So, well, that does it.
That's awesome.
For another episode of the Mark and Toddcast, episode 81. If you have suggestions for what you want to hear show up in the best of segment that I want to do for episode 100, which is 5 months from now. So sometime in September, which is right after our big eclipse episode. That'll be 100 episodes already. So if you have things that you remember, I was thinking of the colorblindness episode, which I think was like episode 29 or something like that. It was pretty early, but I still remember that as being just a really, really interesting and one that I always remember. I had to look up again what we talked about last week, but colorblindness I always remember.
Yeah.
Assault I'm going to remember because I really like the Salt shows. There's just like there's a handful that I always remember as being really fun to do, and colorblindness was one of them. Did we want to mention this?
Yeah.
So along with my big rubber mouth exercise gadget that you got me last week, you got me a face bra. And I won't put it on again because it's a little too complicated, but on the air. But this is basically a elasticy neoprene.
It's like Spanx for your face.
It is totally Spanx for your face, and I'll post a picture of this.
Yeah,
in the comments and then on the page.
The, the phone that the picture that I took is on the phone. Or
it's on the phone. Yeah. But well, the Japanese lady,
we'll
too.
Put it up there. Yeah.
And so it's basically an elastic band that fits around your jaw and over your head and has a cutout for your ears. And it is one of those Japanese things that is supposed to tone
it's resistance, exercise for your face. And so it is holding your jaw closed so that you can talk and exercise your jaw muscles.
Right.
But note the following third band.
It came with a little instruction sheet, which Mark was reading to me.
It says method of use. Step one.
So this is from Japan.
Velcro paste number one place in the picture. Two. Velcro paste number two place in the picture. Three. At last. Velcro paste number three place in the picture. Note, the following, the third band respectively by the band, the neck, the back of the head direction.
He's not stumbling over it. This is like tensile, literally just what it reads.
Of the head direction tensile to achieve the purpose of tightening the scalp. So those are the instructions.
what was my hearing? There's one, and I told Mark that when we were reading this beforehand, that this is what math class felt like to me, these first three instructions, because the first two, like when you look at the thing, Velcro paste, they just mean the place with Velcro on it. So Velcro paste number one place in the picture. So it's showing in the picture. Okay, I get it. I don't know how all those words are supposed to be, but I understand the intent. And then we get to step three, which is at last, Velcro paste number three place in the picture. Note, the following by third band, respectively by the head, neck, and back of the head direction tensile to achieve purpose of tightening. And it's like where it just all falls apart. It just all goes away. But this part was my favorite. Under the suggestion, number one, before used to comb the hair back and don't influence the mask painting department contact and proper cleaning the face, covering parts to keep dry.
You know, they just copied too much to paste into
Google Translate.
And they like accidentally got the credits at the bottom of the page or something. Like they didn't understand what they were. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, I'll use that for maybe the main image if I'm feeling brave of this episode. But, anyway, if you want to get a hold of us, you can look at facebook.com/markandtoddcast. You can leave your comments and you can leave your suggestions or questions, that we can answer for you. You can also go to markandtalkcast.com where you can find all of the old episodes. Like I said, this is episode 81, and we have a lot of really great past episodes that you can listen to if you've got some time on your hands to listen to old podcasts. Other than that, I didn't have anything specific to take us out today, so I thought I would play something that won't slap our video that we put on YouTube with copyright infringement like it always does. So I am going to our intro song, which we haven't talked about in a long time, we put in the sound of the guy talking in our opening song. There's the song, and then there's the "we need science to blah, blah, blah. Can you do it?" or whatever it says. Right. Even though I've heard it 100 times now, I still don't, not even I listen to it anymore. But the music is done by our friend Keelan King, who's also has some shows on the Fun Employment Radio Network. But he does this awesome music, and he did a whole album of 8-bit type video game hip hop songs. And that's the song that we use in our opening. But I thought I would play another song off of his album, which is called 8-bit 8-bit ship, I think, membership. There's a link to it on our site, but I'll put that in the notes too, but it's a really cool little album and it's not very expensive. He's up on SoundCloud. I'll put a link up on that, but here's another song from there. So we will see you guys next time. Oh, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke again. Okay, well, apparently the one we use it for
we'll see you next time.
Now that I have I gave myself face blindness with that aneurysm. So that's the song Membership, which is the song that we use for our opening. But here we go with 8-bit Slave. This was almost our theme song.
Really?
Yeah. And Portland at the Movies.
Goodbye.